Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Thursday stream. I've had people ask me again if Trig's doing okay. He's fine. Go over to his channel. I think it's linked below. He's doing his D&D bits and generally just relaxing away from the political environment, which I think is best for a lot of people at the moment. I just get that out of the way completely first because I've had a few people poke me, being like, "Is Trig okay?" It's Trig's fine.
Trig's okay, but it's hard in these streets, and that man's got some battered hands, so
Yes,
he's allowed to
indeed,
post
indeed.
up.
This is indeed true. As people filter in, we can do the normal YouTube-y stuff. But before that, I'm jumping the gun here. I'm joined by my now regular co-host on both Monday and Thursdays.
Hey,
Although Trig will
you're
probably be
my
back at some
co-host
point.
on Mondays. That's
Oh yes,
don't
well we're
forget
co-hosts of each other.
it.
Well, it's an equal partnership. Our
Yes, exactly.
YouTube channel. Well, we're not doing the midterms today, as I step over introducing you for that sass. Now I'm pretty sure people know who you are know who you are by now, so
No, that's all right.
that's a good thing. It's Evelyn, guys. She's here again, in case you didn't know. No, but yeah, stepping over the midterm stuff, which hasn't concluded yet because Clown World.
Aye.
It's the never-ending election. No, 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 no. Just imagine like Biden not knowing where he is, riding on like some sort of dragon made of spoiled ballots. Yeah.
And now we're instead gonna engage in some schizo theorizing and show you how the chickens that we gutted a few months ago have come true, and our readings from those have been demonstrated to us, and some omens that we have seen over the last couple of days.
S. Smith, first of all, thank you for being a member. I will do a members only thing again at some point. It's just difficult to schedule. But yeah, he says, I gotta know whether trolley color has changed. I'm afraid that the trolley hasn't quite decided what color it identifies as yet.
Yeah.
So we're gonna wait for some certainty there. Otherwise, it's gonna be kind of redundant. And we don't like to do too many hot topic issues anyway. Because our track record on doing those is actually not the best, to be honest. It doesn't. I don't think it gels quite well. It's better to do slightly more evergreen content, I think. But
Yeah.
anyway, I'm rambling. We're kind of going into some of the weird policy signaling that's going on here in the UK. Because as people are delving kind of arse first into US politics, as I've been doing a little bit on the twatters, but mostly just because I was bored on the bus
You
today.
mean someone else called Scrump on Twitter?
Oh yes, of course. Sorry, as my media intern has been doing on Twitter, my media intern who runs my Twitter account. Thank you, thank you for being my lawyer there. Sometimes I need a lawyer. Yeah, the laser focus on the current thing can be quite detrimental, so we're not. We're not doing the current thing. I don't know, do you want to intro this? Because you, I don't know, we both kind of found different bits of this. But the original one you found was kind of interesting. Because it's what we're doing here really is Labour doing a Tory impression and Rishi Sunak doing a Labour impression to basically switch themselves as two sides of the same conversation.
Well, yeah, this is,
And
I think, as we go through this and where we can pick and choose certain things where this is what's said here and this is what's not said here, that you can see the Uniparty at work and two sort of agendas being, I suppose, in many ways delivered to two different types of people, and at some point, because inevitably they will have to, given what has already been said and what we will show this evening, that these things are going to bump into each other. And funnily enough, the problem reaction solution for both of them ties the whole thing up in a nice big bow.
it really does. It seems confusing, but until you see both sides of it. Shall we just get started then, before
Yes.
people get too
This
confused?
was sort of getting thrown around on Monday. It would be on Telegram and other places, and I shared it on our Telegram at one point. And it's, you know, it's something we've talked about before, is the fact that the inevitable shift from unemployment benefits to universal credit to universal basic income is essentially inevitable. It's obvious, really, that if the state, you know, or the those who are in power want to remain there, they're going to have to continue with the Gibbs and to counter inflation and do this, that, and the next thing, and change policy and implement, frankly, aspects of the security state into your benefit scheme, means reframing it as universal basic income. And this is Sunak, who's received all these letters from 300 individual MPs, and this is the one I like as well. An open letter to the new Prime Minister telling him basic income could be our generation's NHS.
Oh, the big thing. Yes, the big one is our generation's NHS. It's a real. We've had the war, and we're still having the war technically. But we've had the stand-in war, which has been the lockdowns, and now we have like the post-lockdown spending. The thing we get out of the deaths. The thing we know we've all sacrificed so much, and what we get as a reward is a new reborn welfare state in the spirit of 1945. They're really drawing on the boomer truth stuff here. They're really, really drawing on kind of a Britain's finest hour idea, because even if you view Boris Johnson as like pound shop gone off Churchill, Churchill got ousted just after the war as well by a Labour government, and betrayals in his own party. So it's there are you could make some parallels there, but really, really shit ones. And then we ended up with the NHS and like 10 years of Labour who pulled down all the country houses. But that's a separate stream.
See, what I find hilarious is that, you know, one of the signatories that Keir mentioned is a food poverty campaigner. What is it again?
Yes.
Something like one in five people in Britain is obese. What do we need a food poverty campaigner for?
Maybe a little poverty could go a long way in
The,
that
yeah, no,
regard, yes.
exactly. But the other thing here is that when I eventually find it, this seems to be an article that is forwarded, sort of, because if you, as we've looked at stuff before, maybe it's something we could go into more specifically, but how you end up with a lot of these articles on the Mirror Online or Sun Online or Guardian Online is NGO organisations essentially paying for promotion, but also like free PR in a certain sense, because they're not having to go out
Yes.
there as Johnny Douglas of UBI Lab Network. Instead, to push forward their idea and have this actually engagement of a poll on the Mirror, which I hadn't noticed before. That was not on the mobile version.
Click,
That's.
click, click the poll. Let's see what the democracy
Oh, it's
says.
55-45. It should have been 52-48. Get it right. But yeah, there's, you know, other comments from avowed communists like John McDonnell, who would still disavow Lenin because he's weak. But instead of, you know, UBI Lab Network, this bizarre background NGO that no one knows about, instead you have a cheery picture of Rishi Sunak, and you tell people it could be our generation's NHS, and you mention all these good people doing good stuff that are supporting it. And then you actually go and look at UBI Lab Network's website, which is horrible, I must say.
Yeah.
They are just another one of these, you know, much like a lot of the rewilding stuff. I swear, because it's a Squarespace website with the exact same font, it's probably the same people that designed this and all your rewilding UK
Over the
nonsense.
same people who run it, it'll all go to the same like address, basically.
But you get to the bottom of their page here, and they're actually good enough to link part of the larger organisation they're a part of, which is this Opus Independence, which when you looked at it was possibly their kind of UK wing of a larger.
Yes, there's basically they're playing the shell game, but they have the same like Tavistock Trust.
Well, that's where I'm getting to here, because you find if you go look up opus.org, which is their sort of larger group, an organization for promoting understanding of society, which just pains me. But yeah, you've got Aki Rice Institute, which when I looked at those is again related to Tavistock, as they've got here, human relations, all these journals about psychoanalytics. You know, it's peak managerial think tank money.
Well, the thing is that we have here UBI Lab, who, through various shell games, through various foundations, through charities giving to charities, funds giving to funds, a large part of their support comes from the government, or NGOs whose support comes from the government, comes from the UN, comes from international financiers. It's the same mix of people. So the government is essentially lobbying the government for UBI. It's one hand kind of washing the other hand. It's them tentatively putting out feelers about the kinds of policy that they would like to have.
Yeah, and then you've
It's
got.
consent manufacture.
Yes. And then here you've got the our manufacturing consensus to then get the
Yes.
consent, as it were. Then you've got what seems to be their kind of working paper or their main white paper that they tout on their website about, proposing a resilience universal basic income. And again, this is, you have the problem of COVID, you have the reaction of people running out of money. Oh, look, someone wrote up a big fancy paper for part of their PhD as the solution. But
Imagine that.
yeah, this is worth some reading on its own, because what they are essentially admitting is that, like, oh, this is the perfect opportunity to test this policy. Oh my God, what are the odds? And the kind of stuff about how furlough made us look at the economy in a way that we hadn't before. We need to reconsider working and benefits and da 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 this, that, and the next thing. There's some interesting linguistic stuff as well. They get to the point here where they're talking about how they're going to fund this program, and
Yeah.
I shit ye not. People's quantitative easing. The people's. That's how they'll fund it.
People's quant COVID dividend. People's QE. And then scrapping personal tax allowances, new income. Basically, they're going to refiddle the rest of the system to make it simpler. And then they're going to print the rest of the money. And then call it a COVID dividend.
Well, it's peak MMT as well. This speaks to the idea of, once a day printing all the funds that need to go out, and then at the end of the day burning them all up through some single tax that, makes your money run out over time or whatever nonsense it is. But it's just like people's quantitative easing. As I said to you in the sort of when we were putting stuff together before the stream started, I just have this image in my mind of like Ben Bernanke and Maoist propaganda.
It's God, the people's QE, comrade. Before I launch into my spiel here, I'll go over our normal boilerplate YouTubey stuff since I haven't done that yet. The best way to support us is through
I've
Streamlabs.
already pinned it in the chat.
Yes. I'll just repost it anyway, just because we're giant shills. But we're still monetized fully on YouTube. You can donate super chats like Glow in the Dark has just done. You can become a member of the channel, which supports us monthly, or you can give, like I said, via Streamlabs if you don't want YouTube to get a cut. I again, as cringe as it is, interacting with the video, liking, commenting, blah 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 blah. Any kind of interaction does help us. Otherwise, these videos will be hidden from you. Just the way YouTube works, we kind of have to play the game. The one of the reasons that we didn't start going over this because of that Ben Gale, but now that I've got our boilerplate YouTube stuff, yes, this is the people's bailout. It's 2008, but they're gonna go, we're bailing you out this time. We're not giving the QE to the banks. This is the people's quantitative easing. We're printing the money and we're giving it directly to you.
You.
And I don't think I don't know. This shouldn't need to be stated, but I think it needs to be that this was prototyped during the lockdowns. I linked it. I don't know if you've got the tweet up, but there's a just a thing here from Keir Starmer during the pandemic, basically saying we did a national income guarantee scheme to combat the coronavirus, and then the Conservatives implemented this. People talk about, oh, I think UBI is in the future. I think, I didn't think we'd be here yet. I didn't think this. Well, we already had a period of UBI. It was called the furlough scheme. It was called the US
Well,
stimulus checks.
that's what I mean as well with this. What they're saying in this PDF is almost sort of admitting that is that, well, furlough just happened to show us how the world can really be. So we've got to continue that. But there, it's just another one of the things I find that is a fantastic admittance, and we'll not go through all of this. And it's one of those ones, if you want the links for this stuff, we'll probably send them out tomorrow or wherever else.
Yes.
They are touting advantage here of UBI and what it will provide. And one of its most transformative potentials they've chosen to list is that you can use UBI as a wage subsidy facilitating cuts to minimum wages. Now, I'm not one to bemoan the idea of not having minimum wage policy, but that just sounds like an unbelievable sort of scope for corporate welfare.
It is a corporate welfare. It's a life supporting of large companies in many ways as well. It's a weird mixture of what is supposedly like hard left and weird techno right policy. They're trying to tickle everyone's balls with this. The whole thing is, it's hilarious that they talk about the 12-month temporary UBI top-up payment, the COVID dividend.
Yeah,
Their
see, I'm.
entire thing in this was they want to keep the furlough going and transform it
Do you want to.
directly into a UBI scheme.
I didn't actually notice this. They actually have their own section where they get into people's quantitative easing.
Yes.
Although neoliberal orthodoxy would suggest there is no money except that which comes from the value people create and that the government taxes, this is simply not true. In a country with sovereignty over its money supply, such as the UK or US, that's a strange term to use. The government can control the amount of money in the economy. It can take money out via taxation, it can put money in through public spending, or it can create new money through additional borrowing from a central bank. This really is just like getting people into MMT, isn't it? I mean, the notion there of a country with sovereignty over its money supply. When's the last time you've
That's
heard
like
a
a
pod?
nod. That's like a nod towards Brexit.
Well,
It's weird.
not just necessarily that. It's also like, when's the last time you ever heard a politician talk about the sovereignty of the money supply?
It's bizarre, but it feels like a rightward argument somehow for both MMT and UBI. But Glow in the Dark donated $10 and said they're just playing the three cup shell game. Where's the ball? It's where the person that controls the game wants it. They just use charities, paper, and think tanks. Yep, that's how all this works. And ultimately, you get back to government money. They get back to the government using its own money to tell it what it wants to hear. But this has been floated multiple times. And lest we forget that Rishi Sunak is supposed to be the moderate alternative to Boris Johnson, who implemented a period of UBI.
Sorry, I was going to have to carry on here because they almost say it. The issue in 2008 was that the money created went straight back into restoring the balance sheets of the bank. PQE, on the other hand, would bypass this process by providing money directly to the government to fund its expenditure. Yeah,
So,
however, we argue that this newly created money could also be deposited debt-free directly into the bank accounts of ordinary citizens, bypassing financial markets and government departments, and going directly into the hands of those who need it most. Well, you need some sort of ID system for that, surely.
you need some sort of verification. But yeah, we did kind of. It's gonna happen, guys, and we're gonna keep saying it. This is our big prediction. The people's bailout is coming.
Well,
The
see.
rhetoric will be on every channel, in every station, on every billboard. We're bailing you out this time. They're gonna do it. They're gonna do
But
it.
see,
It's
the
gonna happen.
interesting thing as well is this is a 38-page PDF that is about their working plan for UBI. So you think there would be other things they might cover. I mean, just out of interest, I looked at this and thought, oh, I wonder if they mention whether or not UBI will be given to immigrants or refugees. There's no mention of them in the entire paper. And then what goes and
Yes.
happens on the same day? Like, so the exact same day that the Sunak story is out, that is, essentially a nod to this organisation and this paper where they don't mention immigration. Keir Starmer, immigration not quick enough to fix NHS problems. And then he goes on again to say in The Telegraph, NHS is hiring too many foreign staff, says Keir Starmer. And then we go to The Times, Labour revives ID card idea to help control immigration.
What date's this? So
Oh,
no, is that 2 days later?
Tuesday, November 8th, the same
Is that
day,
two? No,
near
it's 2
enough.
days later. I'm going to say within the 2 day period, the Labour government has both said that there need to be higher limits on immigration, that immigration cannot fix the quote unquote NHS crisis, and that ID cards, the Blair's big scheme that he never quite got through, is the answer to controlling immigration. And now we see kind of two sides of the same equation. You would think that it would be Labour who was putting forward UBI and the Conservatives who were putting forward border security ID cards. But this is the switcheroo that we are referring to here. By Labour putting forward the ID cards and by the Conservatives putting forward the UBI, we get a strange reverse situation in which Labour can justify UBI much more easily if it's elected, and the Conservatives can justify ID cards to limit immigration if they are elected. By announcing the policies the wrong way round and essentially cancelling out each other's loss of political capital, they guarantee that both party has plausible deniability to implement both policies. It's actually genius.
This is the Blair, isn't it? This is the full, you know, we've been doing the Dark Lord memes, but this has got to be him.
Full spectrum dominance. Blair. It's almost too obvious, but you know that they're not explicitly related to each other. But you have the Labour Party announcing ostensibly a techno Tory policy, and you have the Conservative Party having fluff pieces written about it from its own funding wings. You know, the Conservatives have been in power for over a decade now, uninterrupted, and yet money is still flowing into people like, you know, the UBI network to pressure themselves into having UBI. So you have UBI from the Conservatives. And
this is all, of course, as you've put in the thumbnail, just a week after, if not less than that. No, it would just be just over a week, wouldn't it, since the guy went and tried to petrol bomb the migrant centre in Dover.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it was in the news, you know. But a Labour government could introduce basic ID cards to help count how many people there are in Britain and reduce illegal immigration. And then, you know, usual blah, 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 we'll need to be careful implementing this policy, blah, blah, blah. The French used this, da, 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 da. The French, of course, who Macron, obviously one of his main advisors in a lot of issues, is Tony Blair.
Well, there's another avenue to this that I don't think we should explore, but we've talked about before, which is Boris Johnson's call for voter ID and the implementation of a default basic ID to apply for free of charge for people who can't afford a passport and stuff like that.
Well, that is also part of what we have discussed God knows how many times at this point, the UK government's digital identity and attributes framework white paper,
yes,
which constantly is being updated. You know, we'll have to go back to it in a few months and see what they've added, but that was part of that. That was him softening us up for that. And then it just happens to be that in a July report with the Tony Blair Institute, they happen to recommend introducing universal mandatory digital identity cards to help alleviate the channel migrant crisis. Which...
Yes.
Now, I remember as though someone's mentioned it in chat. Supposedly, if you really dig deep into this, it looks like Blair might actually be directly responsible for the Albanians who are causing this channel migrant crisis at the moment. Because that's also another government he happened to advise not too long ago.
Oh no! Yeah, it's kind of amazing, isn't it? This problem has presented itself. No one seems able to fix it, and yet we have these ready-made solutions to it just spontaneously appearing. And it's even more kind of jarring because you would think that the reaction to the supposed, they're now actually calling it a terrorist attack. They're saying it meets the threshold for a terrorist attack. So an apparent right-wing terrorist attack on a migrant centre has happened. And Labour's reaction is to say, we need to limit immigration. We need ID cards. Immigration can't face the NHS. It's like a lot of people, a lot of the people who take it on face value, a lot of the Twitter roses, let's say, are incensed by this because they do not understand what's going on. Because they think this is...
You've also got the fact that they're too busy calling everyone a gammon because they're, quote tweeting Diane Abbott because she's basically agitating people by suggesting that, well, people weren't nice enough to migrants, so that's why such and such a person got raped the other day.
Yes, it is. Well, what's happened is we've found ourselves in this ridiculous situation where we have thousands of migrants coming across a week and there's no solution offered to it. And then what happens? The Labour government in waiting offers a crumb of a solution, which is part of a wider agenda, which is ID cards. It's we will stop fire hosing you with immigrants who want to kill and rape you if you if you take the ID stamp.
Let's not forget that you know what's going to happen. I can already see it in my mind's eye that, Guardian Network or Guardian Network, sorry, Guardian opinion piece article about how we can't have ID cards because they're not environmentally responsible. And all that plastic and stamping on them and all the ink, that's terrible. So you've got to have digital ID
Oh, they're
cards
going
because
to
it's
be
better for the
digital. They have
environment.
to be digital.
But no, I can just imagine that all the conflagration of excuses as to why it is and why they're all justifying it. The BS BS, so we're doing this part.
Well, the unspoken truth of all of this that we mentioned a little bit ago is that a UBI scheme would necessitate an ID system and most likely a digital ID system. Any quote unquote UK ID cards are going to be digital ID.
Yes.
Yes, the Tony Blair Institute did put out an
This
article.
is their larger digital identity thing, which I think
Yes.
is not exactly the one they're referencing, but the exact same arguments in here. I can quickly, if I
Well, again,
make up.
the Tony Blair Institute has put out recently another call for ID cards to limit mass immigration, but they also have within their policy a digital ID. So one logically follows into the other
Well,
that
no,
any ID scheme
here
is
it is
going to be
directly
digital
from
ID.
them. In the
Yes.
context of migration to the UK, a system like this could provide the infrastructure that ensures people are only employed when they have a legal right to work and have access to the public services they're entitled to. Individuals would simply need to acquire the relevant digitally signed attestations, and there is no reason why this could not be done before entering the country. For existing citizens, the same attestations could be issued using or setting up basic identity attributes. That word again
Yes.
for the first time. This would not be a silver bullet for controlling illegal immigration. It would not track individual activity. Yeah, I'm sure it won't. And there will be some element of non-compliance. So, how dare they? How dare they suggest immigrants are non-compliant? But no, they, but by making it far harder to operate under false pretense, it would radically shift incentives for anyone contemplating gaming the system. It would also restore the public's confidence that the system and our national borders are not being abused, address many of the concerns that drove Brexit.
Big. They're talking about a revolution needed in digital ID, blah blah blah. But yeah, so even this is back in 2018.
Yeah.
So we're now seeing 2018 Tony Blair Institute digital ID pie in the sky that would be dismissed by most people as conspiratorial fodder. That this will never happen, being a mainline New Labour Starmer policy. And it's very, very clear what this means. And like you said, one feeds into the other. Digital ID is a gateway into UBI, and UBI requires digital ID. They're both the same policy in essence. And it would be much easier for a Labour government to justify introducing UBI. In fact, it's partly expected of them.
Well, you found this when you were looking. This is from 2010, actually. That makes this actually a lot more interesting when you realize how far I thought this was not anywhere.
Yes,
Oh,
this
sorry,
is from 2010.
no, it's 2018. I read the.
Sorry, 2018,
Still
yeah.
though, from the exact same period, near enough, as that
Yeah.
previous Institute article. Tony Blair, we must regulate big tech properly. Blah 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 blah. But in here, he's talking about. Talking to some of the current approach to technology, including Chancellor Philip Hammond's plans for digital services tax on technology companies, doesn't scale or doesn't reach the scale of the problem. We've got a regulatory system designed for one age, and we're living in a different age altogether. That is so Blair.
It's very red meat from the rightward perspective, though, because even back in 2018, it was very popular for Republicans in the US to talk about government regulation of big tech. And here we have Blair talking about government regulation of big tech. It seems like a lot of people are begging for a solution to a created problem. The thing is that these social media companies are already an arm of the government, and everybody knows it. The whole DHS thing that came out the other week completely proves they are hand in glove operated. by state agencies. So this whole thing is, once again, creation of problem, solution to problem is expansion of power. Government fights itself like sock puppets. But here we have, it's very interesting that he's talking about the citing the dominance of Brexit and Westminster. Blair said he was astonished by the relative absence of technology from the political debate. Each we think how companies operate, how businesses operate, massive work, blah, 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 blah. However, the former Prime Minister stopped short of calling for the idea of universal basic income, where everyone is given a payment by the state.
Let's go back from the UBI, though. We need to rethink how companies operate, how businesses operate. There are going to be massive changes in the workplace.
Yes.
Dirty bastard and you.
It very much is like a telegraphing thing.
Blair
says government should trial UBI, but isn't convinced the system can be scaled. Well, we have apparent proof now that the system can be scaled. From a Conservative government, which was the furlough scheme, and in the US, which were the stimulus checks. Hmm. And they were heralded as preventing the collapse of society. If it can be implemented in response to a supposed medical crisis, why? And it's now being proposed as a solution to an energy crisis.
See, that...
Why would not it not become the default response to crises in the future?
Mm. But then you've got here, you know, Blair called the issue of making tech firms accountable to their users key for the centre ground of politics today. I think in 2018, the big tech stuff and the big focus on that wasn't really until the year after. Am I right in saying? So it's kind of interesting. Maybe. For him to look at this in terms of, you know, the, because we know he's the competent operator. He will be looking at the tech firms as, quote-unquote, a rival castle.
Yes.
If someone's controlling the flow of information around Britain, it will not be them.
No. It will not. Well, as we're seeing now with the UK, as we talked about the online safety bill, that very much codifies the social media sites as explicitly subordinate. In fact, there is extremely overt power language in that legislation that effectively tells social media companies that you will be brought to heel or you will be destroyed.
Mm.
And even with the existing level of control that they have, they have to like ritually humiliate these rival power centers, even though they've done everything asked in the Prism stuff, in all of, you know, with GCHQ, all of these agencies have had their hands in the information of these big tech sites, and they've done it willingly, enthusiastically in the case of people like Microsoft. But even then, they're going, no, you will follow us completely. There will be no autonomy.
Mm.
And it's very much what this is. He's also, as you can see, he's playing up China very, very heavily. And basically saying that we need to have a social credit system, but not a social credit system to stop the rise of a social credit system. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, no, what it is really is an admittance to the fact that if someone's going to build it, he wants to be responsible.
Yeah. It's like, well, someone's going to build it, might as well be us. We had another donation here, though, from Glow in the Dark. Thank you very much. Said, by allowing them to get the UBI, they will control your life. Without their consent, you can be homeless. Red and blue Labour working together. Yes. Go Labour Rangers with their powers combined. You're screwed. Oh, no. Oh, are we the big rubber monster in that analogy? there's more. Is there anything you want
to... I was going to say, it gets better. Because this is one you have got from time over in the States. And this is their trendy Galaxy Digital Tech Mag section. How blockchain could solve the problem of digital identity. Again, this is another one of those, like, imagine if I could write a headline that answered everything that I look at. Nah, that would be it.
This is what I said. This on its own is basically a bingo. I read this and I'm reminded of your crypto will not save you stuff. And, you know, crypto is surrogate activism.
Just listen to this here. When Vitalik Buterin, the founder of Ethereum, has been asked lately about his favorite projects being built on the blockchain, he often names Proof of Humanity, created by the non-profit Democracy Earth Foundation, and the blockchain protocol Kleros. Proof of Humanity looks something like an online phone book, on which people can sign up and add their citizenship, degrees, or skills. But while the concept is very simple on its surface, Buterin hopes that the system will be an on-ramp for all sorts of more advanced benefits, including better and fairer voting processes, universal basic income, and social media networks that aren't overrun with bots. And misinformation.
It's such a bingo card. It's got all of that, and it's just like the headline even as well. Blockchain could solve digital identity, UBI, misinformation.
But it's not just
voting,
it's from
democracy.
But that's the thing as well. It's like when I've tried to show some of this stuff to people who are into their crypto, they'll go, "Oh, it's from this source. It's from that person. They're just against the agenda of crypto." Blah blah blah. Which to some extent maybe is a fair comment in some places, but when it's from the guy that's the founder of what, the second or third biggest crypto?
Yes.
How are you going to argue with that?
Especially when it's being...
I might actually get this printed on like a t-shirt or something, just wear it all the time.
Especially when it's being pushed by Galaxy Digital, which it's not Samsung, by the way. It's an asset and blockchain institution. Mm. It's basically a big crypto startup. So this is advertorial. It's labeled Metaverse, because of course it is.
Yeah.
And it's talking about the founder of Ethereum, talking about UBI, talking about voting, democracy, misinformation, digital ID, basically all of that stuff. It's been positively. It all meshes together extremely well.
To sign up for the registry, you make a short video of yourself, put down a returnable deposit of about $400, and find one person who's already certified to vouch for you, either using the old-school Pirate Bay techniques. Your profile then gets added to a theoretically secure and decentralized registry on the blockchain, as opposed to data living on a Facebook or LinkedIn server, the blockchain, wherever that is. Yeah, if other members of the community feel you aren't real or use the platform's facial recognition tools to determine you have duplicate accounts, they can dispute your profile. So they've already got their Stasi mechanism. They're literally just training all this crap now.
Yeah, facial recognition tools. It's got all, like, this feels like something written to scaremonger somebody. This feels like we wrote it, but this is sincere. It's from a crypto firm, and it's quoting the founder of Ethereum, and it's in time.
Yeah. For this week's newsletter, I spoke with Santiago Siri, the founder of Democracy Earth Foundation. And the lead creator of Proof of Humanity, as well as a couple of blockchain experts who are more skeptical of Proof of Humanity's goal to become the internet's social backbone. Siri himself doesn't necessarily see Proof of Humanity as a definitive issuer of internet IDs, but rather one step toward breaking out of what he terms the colonial internet, controlled by a few big tech giants. Here are some of the main... Oh, God. We're going to have to go through some of this, because this is brilliant.
Yeah. Creating a universal basic income. Perhaps the first and most immediate appeal of Proof of Humanity is built-in universal income component. When you sign up, you start accruing the platform's cryptocurrency token called UBI, literally a UBI token. Users receive $50 to $100 a month worth of the token, whose value fluctuates along with the larger cryptocurrency market. Oh dear. United States, blah, 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 50 million worth of UBI. This was during the bubble. I imagine that's all fucking gone now. Where's all the money coming from? Siri says that DeFi, decentralized finance mechanisms, have driven fundraising up to this point, including liquidity mining. I bet the arse has just completely fallen out of this thing, though.
Defi, you go look on World Economic Forum or Tony Blair Institute, you run into that word everywhere. Decentralized finance. Democratizing money to the unbanked. The unbanked is all that's up there with people's quantitative easing. The unbanked,
yeah,
that was a great
the
one.
The unbanked and people's QE. Well, they talk about stopping the spread of bots and misinformation on social media. Basically, partially what some people in the texts to Elon were talking about.
But here's
you basically, you are not human unless you are an NFT, is what this is saying.
Well, no, here's even more here. He's talking about the Proof of Humanity team is in the process of exploring other funding strategies, including burning tokens. That means money that goes away. It disappears at your wallet.
Yes.
So they're just developing all these, you know, systems of enslavement and calling it freedom.
Yeah, don't make fun of the crypto bubble. A lot of people lost a lot of digital Beanie Babies. With this, we do need to hire, but we need, like, when it all finally pops, when the governments have to step in and bail out the crypto bros, we need to hire somebody to stand outside of like Coinbase's empty headquarters with a sign saying Beanie Babies are inflation proof, but an inflation proof asset. But it's again, a lot of people would think that this is like pie in the sky quackery. That these are people with a large amount of magical thinking. But as we've seen from Labour and the Conservatives, this is one step away from mainline
Oh my
political
God,
policy.
that is, it just keeps getting better and better here. They're
Keep
talking
going.
about decentralized autonomous organizations, making voting in DAOs fairer. This is some sort of weird blockchain-based democracy system. And they're talking about how those who have got more tokens, they have more wealth, so they have more votes, blah, blah, blah. Siri says that he is working with DAOs to implement one-person, one-vote systems. He also hopes Proof of Humanity will develop secret voting protocols with zero-knowledge NFTs, which ensure the legitimacy of a vote while keeping the person who cast it private.
Oh dear. The whole thing about all of this is that even if you take like the digital ID stuff at face value, there is, or you take the ID card stuff at face value about the immigration control stuff, it only has any meaning with enforcement. Like they have to come and get you. They have to come and get people. And it's the whole like no, unknown unknowns thing. It's like, how do you create a system to target people who are not inside the existing system? You really can't. Unless like the Labour government is proposing going house to house, having people hold up their IDs at gunpoint, this isn't going to do anything about immigration. It's a complete impossibility. But I think everyone knows that as a starting point. But I just thought I'd lay that out there in case there was any doubt whether
Well,
this
see,
was at all genuine.
this just continues to offer like great stuff here. You've got a part up here where some Kate Sills, a software engineer who previously worked at the blockchain agoric, whoever this person is, and she's complaining that oh, there's all these problems with your system. People can change their makeup or their facial hair, or people get mass reports.
Yeah.
But it's all right, Siri says. He's also cognizant that humans examining other faces isn't a perfect system. I'm sorry, but that's how humans have got on for the last
Yeah.
God knows how long. I think humans examining other humans' faces is a perfect system, you'll find. And that it could lead to some errors. But he says that implementing more technology, including machine learning, into the processes poses much greater risk. If I go out and start scanning people's eyes, there's no way I can guarantee that a venture capital firm who controls 80 million fake eyes couldn't come and control the entire network without disclosing it. I wish we had a better trade-off on that. So he's basically saying we need government to do this.
Yeah, he's saying we need a sovereign arbiter, and that sovereign arbiter will be government. That's,
I can't believe how much of a gold mine that article is. That's brilliant.
like I said, it's a bingo.
That first paragraph. I couldn't have written something that
It's again, it's what we're saying, but from the other direction. It's like, here's the dystopia, here's why it's. That's where all this is. Oops, excuse me. That's kind of where all this is coming from. Our policy, like essentially policy documents like that. And if you don't think that a lot of this crypto blockchain stuff is coming from governments and NGOs, like I don't, one, I don't think you've been watching our content, and two, I have a bridge to sell you because it's becoming so obvious, and all of the technological hurdles that are being presented to things like digital ID. Blockchain or facsimiles of blockchain are being posited as the only real solution to it. So I don't really know how people can quibble with this stuff.
Well,
The crypto bros are leading you into the techno fascist
but
state,
see,
but not in the based way.
it's not even like there is like a group out there that are like crypto skeptics that are like, well, no, this technology has these uses, which maybe it does to some extent, but it's being subverted and it's been taken over by these groups. I don't see
Yeah.
any of that.
No, there is pure apologetica And
Well, it's
there
not
is
even
people.
apologetica because they don't bother going looking. They don't know that, the guy who's the founder of Ethereum is working on digital ID systems, social credit scores, and better voting and universal basic income.
Well, the problem is a lot of those people go, well, here's why that's a good thing. Because there's a lot of people who have deluded themselves into thinking that that's possible with enough technology. It's like that's technology, that's not socialism, man. It's very it's I don't know how many of them are genuine, but it seems like it's articles of faith rather than anything, and that there's just this very much a kind of Q trust the plan approach in
Well,
many
it's
crypto
even
circles.
aside from, ideology in regards to, oh, it's socialist or it's more of the welfare state. You can you like I do you want people who control machines somewhere else in the world to have this much influence on your life and this much control over? Do you want to be this dependent on these people? Because it just seems to be day in, day out that we are always presented this as sort of all these scruffy casual people who aren't your usual elites or your trusty anti-heroes. And they're spending so long, it's all the entire crypto movement is just like a PR op for the social credit system they've built a decade working on.
It feels like how people were sold tech startups, social media, Facebook and Twitter in the beginning with, the jeans wearing cool CEO tech bro people. It very much feels like that. And then Prism happened, and then people largely ignored it for a while. But, then we very much know that these are just hands of the government. They are information sponges that for Western governments to reach into and fuck people over. We just know this, and we have large amounts of evidence that the crypto system has become that too. But I want to turn this into another crypto stream. The issue here, as we talked about earlier, is that we have two sides of the same argument being put forward by both major UK political parties. And there are some people who are delusional about this, but whatever you think is going to happen, one of those parties is going to be in power most likely for the next decade. In fact, it's almost impossible or unforeseeable that one of them wouldn't be. It is such a remote possibility. You don't either have a Labour or Conservative government in, say, 2035. It's not really worth talking about. There is no political coalition, even on the horizon, that is capable of toppling either of these parties as a major political party, because you'd have to do both. And that's really a demonstration of this, that you have policy announced basically on the same day. Well, policy pressure applied and then policy announced on the same day, that are two sides of the same equation. And you have each party deliberately stealing each other's rhetoric to push kind of the omni-party objective, the establishment
Well,
objective. You're going,
the way you put it towards the start was perfect. They both eat each other's like negative political capital by doing it at the same time. And it's almost, it's not so much that we can point to them and say, look, they're doing it directly or they're saying it directly. But for so many of these things to line up, being using the same sort of language, one pointing to the other so heavily, and all in the same time frame. It's like, well, I think we are past a point where we don't see connections in this stuff. You've kind of got to have any idea really what's going on, especially over a longer term, and being able to see a trend as it develops. And I think it's maybe a good thing that we do come back and sort of cover, especially the digital ID and this idea of a social credit score issue, relatively often, because it's not like we run out of stuff. We don't go looking for it really so much unless
No.
something else has prompted us to.
Well,
It just
these are main,
keeps coming up.
these are mainline policy announcements. Joseph Taylor, actually relevant question: wouldn't universal income just increase inflation? Yes, but what they are also proposing, if you look at the digital ID and digital currency stuff, is a burnable currency. The idea, and this is what they do in China, it doesn't work, but the idea is with MMT is you create enough money for people to spend, and then the money that's quote unquote excess gets destroyed. They basically burn the inflation on the other end, and it becomes a completely fictitious system
What
in which,
they make billions of dollars just disappear over periods of time, like in economic bubbles for assets that don't exist in the real world?
Yes. And then whatever is considered a structural risk rather than an acceptable loss, in quotes, is absorbed, like we saw with the when we did the pension stream last week. The pension stream is an exact example of what happens when you get inflationary forces and when you are able to create assets. Essentially, UBI already exists for large companies. Any company over a certain threshold in Britain is guaranteed by the Exchequer and is guaranteed by the Bank of England, because any of the dominoes falling is seen as a Northern Rock style situation. It's seen as a potential trigger for a reassertion of reality in a financial crisis. So it will increase inflation, yes, but the idea with UBI is that they can print money fast enough and distribute it to the population fast enough that the inflation, one, doesn't get noticed, and two, if it does get noticed, what they'll do is they'll just destroy a bunch of money. Or they'll knock a zero off the currency and say, well, the currency is worth this now because we say it. And then the problem is that creates more problems. It creates supply chain problems. It creates a situation in which you go, well, we control the currency, but these private companies outside of our control are manipulating it and need to be nationalized. That's what Venezuela did. I know Venezuela gets brought up as an example at the time, but they went through that cycle. You create inflation, and to try and control both the goods aspect and the money aspect, which you need to control both to control prices, you have currency control and price control. And the theory is that with enough technology, you can solve what is like the calculation problem. That's the argument about digital currency, that because it isn't real, people won't notice, and because it can be destroyed and created at will, within, milliseconds in some cases, that we have the technological solution to the calculation problem now, that they quite literally can, in a very minute way, control money and control goods and control demand. But as we all know, that doesn't work. You can't actually do that, and it leads to mass misery, but it also leads to mass control. That's the point.
Well,
And
see, it's
it's
the.
the technology is the aspect here.
See, I would be the last person to say that economics doesn't matter. It always does. It is always there and
Yes.
is always prevalent. But we are so far away from what is a market in any recognisable sense. Not just because of policy, mind you, but because of the scale that even, quote unquote, private organisations have to operate at. Or choose to operate at whatever way it is, there isn't, calculation in the same way that someone like Mises saw. Even with the big companies that were around in his day, it was not the same as it is now. You did not have your Amazons or your Googles or as much economic interaction going on with stuff that just isn't real. It's digital, it's advertising, it's money that never actually gets printed and held physically in anyone's hands. So there's so much room to fudge it nowadays that really, to a certain extent, it doesn't matter. It's just kind of like a. Here's our. I'm trying to think of like how to frame it in the Stone Toss Burgers comic. But here's how we're going to solve the economy, social security system. How is that going to help with inflation? Inflation?
Yeah, the moment you ended up with like a social safety net, it's the same arguments back in, say, 1910 were made about things like state pensions. And the solution to state pension was, oh, we'll have national insurance contributions that will cover it, blah, 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 blah. Then they never did. And in order to meet the pension deficit that we talked about last week, the government and financial institutions have constantly printed money or accepted printed money in order to keep the system going. Any form of welfare does that. Any form of welfare is essentially money creation, because the ideas behind it, the ideas of an insurance-based welfare system, don't work, because that's just insurance. And if people want insurance, they'll buy insurance because it has existed from like the 1500s in Europe, possibly before. I think there's examples of insurance in antiquity, I don't know.
Well,
Maybe history.
you could essentially insure against other farmers locally using the same sticks they used to use for
Yeah.
some of the first debt recordings. I believe there was a system they used for that where they could not necessarily pool resources, but it's like, well, if my field gets flooded, you're gonna at least gonna make sure like my lot doesn't starve to death, and we'll do the same for you if your field gets flooded.
Yes. Epic Ninja asks, wouldn't UBI make it a lot harder to manage? I mean, financial crises happen more often. Yes. But as we've learned over the past 100 years, crises are how the elite class thrive. And if they can create a constant state of kind of medium-sized crisis for the individual and then continually posit more of their complex system solution as they've always done, then that benefits them. Yes, the creation of a permanent crisis but not collapse situation is what they want. And it's what we've seen. It's what we saw during the lockdowns. It's what we're seeing during the energy crises and all of this. We have lurched really since about 2001 from one medium-sized crisis to another. There
Well,
was
yeah, now
moderate.
you've got 9/11, the Iraq War, 7/7.
Well, you got 9/11, Afghanistan, Iraq, in the UK 7/7. Then you have the financial crisis, the austerity era, and the stagflation recovery. Then you have the forever wars. You have Syria, the Arab Spring. You have still the continuing war on terror stuff. Then you get into the Bush. Sorry, you get into the Trump years. You get into 2015, 2016,
Brexit.
culture war, Brexit. Then you end up in the lockdowns. Then you end up in the energy crisis, inflation. It's lurched from one to the other. There's probably some I've missed because there's so many that happen, we just forget about them. But we have people. There's a lot of people. Maxime Bernier said it recently, actually. The fucking leaf, who's supposedly some kind of conservative. In fact, let me get that up, because it's such a good example. Maxime Bernier, where is he? He's over there on the Twitters. He talks about basically return to Fresh Prince. And it's amazing. I think, oh, I hate to be cringe and go on my own Twitter, but I think I talked about it there. I want to get the exact quote up because it's a perfect encapsulation of everything we talk about when we talk about people viewing the 90s as this horrendous neutral. Here it is. I'll put it in the link section if you want to get that one up. For the people at home, I'll give you a second. But just get have a gander at that. There we go. Can we just go back to the 1990s when communism had just imploded and the woke crazes only controlled sociology and comparative literature departments in universities and no one cared? Here he is, Maxime Bernier, the great conservative hope in Canada, in Le Canadia Maple Land, literally quite saying return to Fresh, literally saying return to Fresh Prince. This is supposedly the bleeding rightward edge of Western democracy. These are the people who are supposed to rescue us from the quagmire of modernity, and they just want to return to the post-racial society and bask in the warm glow of the fake victory in the Cold War.
Well, see that I wait. If we're gonna go down this line, I might as well get up the thing I grabbed the other week as well, because we've got some nonsense we could look at about Rishi Sunak and eco stuff. But I actually, in a certain sense, find the conversation around this slightly more interesting. If I can, right.
Go ahead, go ahead. We're
This
kind of
is,
in free form space now. We
yeah.
we've covered that. Hopefully you guys grasp the switcheroo. Please ask me questions if you don't grasp the switcheroo, but it's like I said, it's amazing to watch
Sorry, I
the
was gonna like
Conservatives and
flash
Labour
loads of
trade
crap in front of people's
policies
eyes. Apologies.
in such an obvious way. Because
See,
this it's
I forgot to use it today.
what? What is it?
The collapse watch.
Oh, of course, of course. I think we're on a permanent state in this one, but
Yeah.
There we go. Collapse Watch is back. We need it. We need it. We still need a musical sting for that. You can open in the background, but I'm pretty sure an air raid siren would do it. But
Yeah,
yeah,
nah.
it really.
Chuck him in the chat. Right, let me back into the Matrix. It's a pretty hot take. Hey, you try and get licensed as a forklift operator and then tell me about where you want to be in the Matrix or not.
No, I was forklift
Certified.
certified. Well, this is an opinion I've heard from so many different people, from so many of, less let online skeptics believe this. Like a large percentage of them do. They believe that we just need to return to the politics of the 90s and we'll be fine. We just need to prevent the rot from taking, taking hold from there.
Well,
That's an
it's all
opinion I
right
hear
because
almost constantly.
their hero and savior is here. He's billionaire CEO of Citadel, Ken Griffin, who's backing DeSantis as some sort of anti-Trump move. And I normally would just pass off nonsense like this, but this guy's giving $60 million alone to essentially the DeSantis campaign, which basically means all that money is going to like Daily Wire and Prager and
Yeah.
all the people you know who would be big
I
into the
we
DeSantis nonsense.
We'll talk about it during our midterm stream, but the reaction to basically the fake politics is effectively a never Trumper we told you so moment. And people like National Review, basically all the acceptable rightward alternative media outlets are saying we need to be more realistic. In fact, one of them even went as far as to say we need more generic Republicans.
Well, no,
They actually use the term,
this is
so
what he says on here. I'm just looking for it at the moment. They just talk about he's
yes.
charitably giving. He gave $5 and $10,000 immigrant increments those days early to Republican and Democrats alike when he was in Chicago. Mayors Richard M. Daley and Rahm Emanuel. So he was involved in turning Chicago into a corrupt shithole then, even more than it was before. I'm
Well, I
sure
think we're
probably.
cannibalizing the midterm stuff a little bit here.
Well, no, I was only wanting to focus on this one, and where is it he says it? I can't remember where I found this before.
Oh no, you've lost. What did you say?
Oh, come on.
Hello, what did you say? Oh
I
no, she's
swear
lost
this was
it.
in here. Don't tell me they've changed it on me.
He might have changed it on you. That does happen very, very regularly.
No, I
Yeah,
suppose
this is
it.
generally why we use archives for these articles, because people used to make a big deal out of
Ah,
stealth
sorry.
edits.
Here we go. As an example, Griffin openly disagreed with DeSantis' provocative fly move to fly nearly 50 Venezuelan migrants, blah, 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 Martha's Vineyard, and DeSantis' blow up with Disney World, one of the state's largest employers. The Sprang also ran afoul of Griffin's focus on mending Republican corporation or Republican relationships with corporate America. After the company criticized the governor and GOP-controlled state legislator for passing contentious LGBTQ legislation, blah 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 blah, its long-standing special district status. Yeah, I think they've changed this because if I remember specifically when I first read this, he was essentially saying that no, we want the Republican Party to step away from fighting wokeism and the culture war and get back into proper politics, like adults in the room nonsense.
Yeah, proper conservatism. We need to get back to the Bush era. But again, I don't want to ruin. I would ruin our midterm stream if I went into my spiel here, so I'm going to not comment on this. I think that we do have a couple more here from the UK perspective, though. Is it worth us talking about the COP27 stuff at all?
No, not really, because I think the entire thing is summarized by one bloody National Geographic article, if I can quickly find
Yes,
it.
well, that's the one I was going to talk about here. This is they're kind of skipping the middlemen and going straight into the weird global financial stuff. Because when we talked about Sri Lanka, a lot of people got upset because they didn't quite understand what was going on there. But the climate stuff is how a lot of these smaller nations are getting like completely destroyed by people like the World Economic Forum or the World Bank.
Well, I some people might notice that I posted this on a Telegram when I saw it first, and it was essentially like this sort of jaded or chided the fact that it would, you know, if who's to pay climate reparations, the answer is of course white people. And there's a sort of general rule of thumb, if any article asks who should pay for anything or who should pay for reparations, it's always white people. Yeah, it's just it's usual nonsense, months long rolling heat wave, Pakistan, flooding, you know, all these countries where they have no idea how to deal with land and water tables, and they have no like proper geology, so everything's built on shit foundations and
Yeah,
floods every summer.
paves over delta, land subsides and flood. Oh no, help. It's a lot of like third worlders being third worlders, not understanding how their local climate works.
They've supposedly come up with some new science, I'm sure that'll be debunked very quickly, that shows how specific heat waves and super potent rainstorms can be
Oh no,
identified.
scroll to the bottom, scroll to the bottom.
Well, no, because there's a great line I want to get to first before we get to whatever you've just found.
I've just found something.
Where is the
Keep going,
one?
sorry.
They say somewhere about. See, I've got the screenshot for this on my phone, but I can't bloody find it now. No, they have a thing, you know. Oh, it's developing nations. They, you know, they may have not the best or incomplete data, and it's somewhere around here, I'm sure. Yeah, there are limits to attribution's power. This is the modelling they're talking about that these people in third world countries have developed to work out whether or not rainstorms are caused by foreigners. There are limits to attribution's power, though, and often those limits follow the outlines of historical injustices.
What?
Yeah, that's funny that. The technique requires good models of regional data and climate and weather, which requires solid historical data such as daily weather observations, because so much scientific expertise has been centred in the global north, sometimes it's harder to do in places without reliable weather records.
So
Yeah.
they actually have no idea what the weather was
No.
like 30, 40 years ago in these places. It's just an article of faith. But attribution action, basically what's being argued here and what's being said is that the end result of all this COP27 stuff will be what is ostensibly a Belt and Road Fund. And it will be an environmental Belt and Road Fund for all of these countries. And what they will do is what they did in Africa is they will ban people burning wood indoors. Like they will ban people from making like traditional wood stoves. There's a whole thing about cooking in the open in India, like trying to sell Indian villages like electric cookers and shit like that. It's hilarious. But all it does really is prevent them from burning LPG, prevent them from burning coal and gas, and prevent them from having local fuel sources. And like what happened in Sri Lanka, you will end up with a local collapse because people are reliant on foreign energy sources that are no longer affordable for them, and they will have to take out ever more debt from these large institutions. That's where this leads to. But yeah, the what's being posited here in this National Geographic article is it is the green imperialism stuff. We've reached that again, and COP27 has been a bit more explicit with it. And to go over the some of the Rishi Sunak stuff, he wasn't going to go, then he went, and it is very much a case that what's being put forward is another kind of switcheroo in which the Conservative Party are for. Okay, scroll down, keep scrolling, keep
Yeah, no,
scrolling,
what
and
is it? What was it you found? Oh, they've got
keep
James
no, no, keep
Hansen.
no, keep scrolling, keep. Look, he says, read this next. What does it say?
Yeah, oh no, I put that on the Telegram as well. Scotland could become first rewilded nation, and essentially saying the fact that this would be all very well and good to return to some form of organic, you know, living on the land. But actually what's gonna happen is you're gonna get bust into like Muck Mega City One and
Yeah.
Zuckerberg and Tim Cook and his kids
Oh,
are going to
it's
roam
just
across the Cairngorms freely.
funny that the rewilding stuff is being pushed into like this agenda stuff.
Yes.
I don't know. Not th th this feels like the I told you so stream, but we have been consistently quite ahead of the curve there. Expect to see more of that rewilding stuff within the whole climate change agenda. But yeah, we did call it, and the fact that Scotland is trying to say it's going to be a rewilded nation when Scotland really in many places was never unwilded, to be honest.
No.
Scotland does have some of Britain's last proper wilderness in it. Or at least some of the old kind of Neolithic and early medieval managed field systems that are relatively ancient in it as well, but it's something that we'll start seeing a lot more of. And again, there's been surprising quiet from the Labour Party about a lot of the climate agenda
Well,
stuff.
I'm actually going to quickly let me grab a link and just to top it off with immigration stuff, because this is an interesting thing to add as well. Because again, it's going to tie back into something we talked about, funnily enough, the other week when we were doing the stream on integration.
While you're finding that, I will very quickly mention that this week as well, Keir Starmer has admonished the loonies in the Just Stop Oil slash Extinction Rebellion camp, and posited himself and, weirdly enough, also the Conservative Party in many ways by not criticizing them as the sane kind of alternatives in terms of the climate debate. That we are once again seeing how the ratcheting works, and that we have a repugnant entity that is far off into the weeds popping up, and then them meeting them halfway and saying, "Look, guys, we're still going to do this, but we're going to do it without the weird, ugly hippie stuff. But we're just going to do it anyway. It's we're going to put you in the pod, but the pod's not going to, the pod's not going to have orange spray paint all over it."
Yeah. Right, so this is another one from the Mirror. Mind you, on the 7th of November,
Yes.
Ed Balls and Susanna Reid with journalist Andrew Pearson, Albanian professor Lee Yipi, who, if there's a picture of her later in this article, is hilarious because I think they've found the only attractive Albanian woman on the planet. There she is. You're not Albanian. Come on. But
My
yeah.
fellow.
But usual nonsense. They've gone and got some Albanian university professor come on and talk about how, oh, it's not just that they're criminals and people are being country's Prime Minister Edi Rama to accuse of purely xenophobic comments about whatever Sulia Braverman's had to say. But this is the bit that I found very interesting, because we have only, what, 2, 3 weeks ago, we talked about this reframing of immigration and integration.
Yes.
Albanians have been swallowing it for a very long time because they're very integrated. They're very compliant with the community and they didn't want to cause a fuss. She continued, "The problem is that when you have a country that begins to treat its minorities like this, they will all get angry. It's not just a problem about the Albanian community. It's a problem about Britain. You begin to disintegrate the cultural project of integration if you start treating minorities like this."
Yeah, these are British citizens. The Albanians here are angry.
I'm
So
sorry, disintegrate the cultural project of integration. So you're saying it's a two-way street?
Yes.
I mean, it was literally weeks ago we were looking at that stuff, and again,
Yeah.
just like with the ID and the UBI and talking about the sort of some of the different full right switcheroos and maneuvers that would happen over the course of this year and will continue on. It's hilarious how much stuff we've really called.
Oh,
Maybe.
the Albanian stuff is funny though, because like nobody in Europe likes the Albanians.
No.
Like it goes like the hierarchy in Europe goes like this. It goes like Western Europe, Italy and the Mediterranean, Central Europe, Hungary and Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Serbia, and then right at the bottom is Albania. Like Albania is like the no nobody likes Albania. Nobody likes Albanians, and it's kind of funny that they've become like the last frontier in all of this. That we that they're talking that they've somehow both blamed and rehabilitated the eternal Albanian in like the same week, and it's bizarre because it reminds me of like weird debates on poll or something. We have become so obsessed with like the minutiae of who is British and who is integrated, because you couldn't say this about the Polish, because oh, the Polish have been here so long, there are plumbers, blah blah blah, hardworking Polish people. But now you've got oh, they've had like scramble around them, like well, it's the Albanian people smugglers. It's
Yeah.
it just it feels so weird and
Do you reckon
fake, like.
like they get like the head of every ethnic community in Britain together? Like we have had a whip round, we've drawn straws. Sorry, it's the Albanians this week.
It's so weird because
But
like
it's all right, Albania though, because next week you don't have to draw straws. So you've got at least another week till we take the piss out of you again.
I mean I'm sure they exist. Albanian organized crime is a presence in the UK, I'm sure, but I'd be kind of pissed off if I was Albanian as well, because the idea that Albanians are responsible for the migrant crisis is kind of ridiculous. It's, I mean, unless the Albanians are all like the staff of the RNLI or something, like maybe it's secretly just all Albanians in the lifeboats. But the idea that they plucked out of a hat, like there must be some policy person somewhere who's like, right, who is
Spin the
the,
wheel.
who is the least represented Eastern European group that we could possibly scapegoat and then rehabilitate in the UK. So yeah, I don't know, fuck, we finally reached our, like who are they going to be blaming next? Like Uzbekistan? Like are we going to get like the Uzbek
Yeah,
question?
there's someone in the chat. It's like the most common religion in Albania is Islam. I did not know this. This is why they're the lowest Europeans. They would be.
Again.
They would be lower than the Turks if the Turks were Europeans. Oh no, they would be on the
Yes.
same peg, sorry.
Like Albanians are, yeah, the Albanians only don't lose to Turks because we don't class Turks as European. Even though Turks would go, no, we're Caucasian, we promise, please, we're white, which is quite funny. seriously, ask Turkish people about that. They don't class themselves as Arabs. They basically class themselves as Aryans, which is really fucking funny. But yeah, I can't. I can't view this as anything but like complete comedy, because it's just we have such a structural issue in terms of NGOs fire hosing people into this country deliberately, and the RNLI, for people who don't know, that's the Royal Lifeboat, whatever they're called, institute or whatever. They are the ones responsible for it. Like somebody gets that, you can be paddling in Brittany, and the RNLI will pick you up. you could be up to your waist just about, and the RNLI would ferry you to British shores if you are brown. And yet apparently one, it's the Albanians, and two, we're powerless to stop the Albanians. Apparently Albanian
Like
organized crime is
who's given
stronger
the
than the British
orders to the
government.
fucking RNLI to do all this? That's what I want to know.
Oh, sorry, I missed a donation here again from Glow in the Dark saying the big issue is because these people believe in paperwork and regulations above all else, they do not wish to do that for everything. They wish to do it for everything, sorry. Spreadsheets for all. Basically, yes, the eternal spreadsheet. It's like, well, this can't happen. We have a spreadsheet about it. It's like, well, we can't stop these migrant boats coming in, so we're going to have to improve, the poor migrants. The poor migrant victims of
Well, no, it's
the
the.
Albanian
Yeah,
menace.
no, it's like, oh no, there's more than five of them here. We're gonna have to start counting them. And then we might know what we want to do.
It's again, lending more credence to the fact that the entire public discussion revolving around basically any policy area is fake, and you couldn't engage with it like it's real. Otherwise, you end up calling Suella Braverman a based Brit, and waving your arms at phantom Albanians. Ah, dear, that's rather funny. Is there anything else we've forgotten then before we
No, I think
are we
we've gotten through everything we needed to and a little bit more, and I think we're trailing towards the end of the conversation. Just sort of think about how much of it all is just nonsense.
It's all so tiresome. Oh God, I almost forgot to put out my speech today.
Oh. Is it going to be exclusively released live on stream then?
It will be exclusively released Live on stream, yes.
Yeah, no, somebody in chat. We had 1 million people come in last year, which is a third of the population in Albania. In 2024, they're going to have to come up with a new category of hate. That's what the Eritreans are here for.
Yes, that's what the Eritreans are for. But I have just taken my speech from Nomos London Live. I've double checked. The website's still down, but that's because I've had a chat with Josh, our web admin, who graciously kind of hosts it for us. He's one, the data center we use is having a bit of trouble still, and two, even when it does come back up, he's going to have to poke it a little bit. But basically, nothing has happened. Our data is still safe. They're just kind of abundance of caution because they've had a few fucky things happen to them. So yes, here we go. Oh, you've posted. Okay. We have taken my speech from Nomos London Live, though. So that is once needs practical dissent, the speech that I gave a couple of week, well, the weekend before last in London. So yes, we do publish things on anti-politics. There's another article that I'm hoping to get into shape for next week. It is pretty much done. I just need to give it a couple more kind of sanity passes, if you know what I mean, and maybe get it copied a little bit. But there will be more content on the Substack from me.
I'll give it a look.
I think it's probably in a state to give it a, for you to give it a look now. I did a little bit of it the other day, so that's there is going to be more written content.
Yeah,
what
I have to. I'm buried in books at the moment, but I came across something today in Ancient City, which is honestly given me about another like dozen different essay ideas to stick in a book next year. So like it was just this one. I didn't know I was looking for it, and then I came across it and read it, and I was like, oh, right, I see. That's where we're onto something here. It's almost like a perfect. I'll not get into it too much, not just because it's late, but I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
But shall we say, I've found a very nice worked example to demonstrate both the arbitrary and the technical nature of power. I'll leave it at that.
I look forward to it. Just double checking we don't have any more super berries to to count. God, that's a terrible old riff.
Super beans.
Super berries and donker. What an era. What a terrible era that
right,
we
that's
all...
it. No. Stream's over.
No. Stream's over, guys.
Shut it down.
Oive, shut it down. Thank you for coming today, guys.
Yes.
As always, do remember to interact with these videos in some way, just so they won't be hidden from you. We will be back most likely on Monday talking about the US midterms and why they don't matter, because they really don't.
I will likely put together some form of maybe brief explainer with a few links, or all the links that we've gone through this evening, and put that up on Telegram tomorrow if I've got the time, and I'm sure you'll put that elsewhere if I do.
It will be in the pinned comment. I'll put out a community post about it.
I was going to write up a quick, more contextualized thing around it, just a couple of sentences for each link, but
I should be able
to do that in the morning.
That will be linked tomorrow then. So we will have proper show notes tomorrow if you guys want to read this stuff yourselves, because we do encourage people going around and trying to interface with these primary sources. Do have a look as well about where the funding of all these kind of NGOs we come across comes from. It takes quite a long time for us to audit that, and you might spot something we've missed.
Mm.
Following the money is a very, very good thing, an extremely good practice for trying to figure out where agendas come from and who is genuinely in power. So that's it's a very good thing just to, if you feel like harnessing some autisms, that's a very worthwhile thing to do. But we're in danger of rambling again, and I won't mention some terrible eras of internet madness. So we're just going to say goodnight, I think.
Good night from me.